Welcome to Talking Football. I'm Eric Nicholson, and with me are Jim Spence. Well, I say with me, we've now started home working as most of the country has. So, without wanting to paint a picture, I'm sitting in my dining room looking at a hamster who will probably, hopefully, sleep throughout this. Jim, yourself, where are you?
I'm sitting in my kitchen in Birkhill looking at the Sidlaw Hills, Eric, and I am reminded of once when we used to do the through-the-window transfer programme on Sportsound, when Wee Young was sitting in his kitchen one night when his doorbell rang and it was a guy delivering his curry, you know, which was good because it was a quiet night.
If you're talking your usual rubbish, I'll wake the hamster up, don't worry, Jim, and see if I can get something a wee bit more sensible. But yes, for those of you listening, we did think it was important. We kept the podcast going, and we're going to do our very best to do that. Obviously, the sound quality may not be quite as crystal clear as you'd expect at DC Thompson HQ, but hopefully you will agree that it's far better than nothing. And let's face it, there's no football being played, but there's plenty to talk about. Jim, I mean, I don't want to be flippant about this, but you know, we keep hearing the phrase unprecedented and all the rest of it. You'll have never known anything like this, will you?
Well, no, Eric. I mean, even I'm not old enough to remember the Warriors, you know. No, I mean, it is. It's entirely unprecedented. And, I mean, look, in the greater scheme of things, I suppose what we have to say right at the outset is football is the least important, or probably the most important of the least important things at the minute, I think, is what I'm trying to say.
You know? I think that's one of Jürgen Klopp's, isn't
Yes, that's right.
Or Ancelotti, one of the two, or both.
One of the two, you know, both greater philosophers than me. But, I mean, they're both, whichever one it was, they were absolutely right in that respect. However, you know, at the end of the day, we've been urged to kind of carry on life as possibly normal as possible, and we will not be able to stop people talking about football because there are so many things thrown in here. Will Celtic be awarded the top title? Will Dundee United be awarded the top title? What will we do? Will we end up playing behind closed doors? Will the season be voided? Well, we think we know that the season, the notion of the season being voided, has been knocked on the head. I think the key thing is what we do to finish it. I mean, I know you wrote your piece talk in the Courier about UEFA hoping to have the game back up and running by June the 30th, but they've left that door open, haven't they? You know, in the nature of things. And I think that's the situation. I mean, this is a really fluid situation. We'll not get into politics of it, but it's a bit like people having to go at those who are running in the country at the moment. I've got some sympathy because it's such a fluid situation. Things are changing day to day. And, you know, just a week ago, we were saying, can we not play behind closed doors? Now there are all sorts of potential pitfalls in terms of insurance, players being out of contract and all the rest of it that are going to have to be addressed. So I suspect the UEFA and the Scottish authorities, SFA and the SPFL, will be trying to address these on a daily basis and as they arise, but keeping in mind that they would want to, you know, try as best they could to have everything done by June 30th if it's possible.
I mean, there seems to be a divergence. It's not an official divergence. Ian Maxwell is towing the UEFA line after yesterday's conference calls involving UEFA and the statements that came out, their sort of mission statements. But if you believe, well, there's no reason to disbelieve some of our national papers this morning, which are unquoted sources, but they'll be well-informed sources, are that the SFA and SPFL would have been happier. They want an immediate call off the league. Basically, then they can do one of two things: either void it, which I think is extremely unlikely, or give the points. Basically, declare winners relegated teams on the basis of what we have already. And I think, and the reasoning being that they fear that the passing of time will be involved, the passing of football clubs, to put it bluntly, that not getting money in, that basically they need finality so that clubs can then get the prize money and all the rest of it and then start from scratch after that. But that seems to be totally at odds with the wishes of UEFA, certainly the bigger leagues across Europe, and I would think most football fans as well, because, you know, there is such a thing as as sporting integrity, isn't there, Jim?
Yeah, well, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we had this issue, remember, albeit in a different kind of a much different setup when Rangers were looking to be invited to start life again in the top league. And that was mm-hmm. a phrase that kept coming through from clubs. Look, you need sporting integrity. Now, that was an entirely different kettle of fish. However, the word sporting integrity is very important here. I mean, you know, the league season has a set number of games. If we don't mm-hmm. play that set number of games, then you've got a situation where if you award the title, then you know, is it possible that Celtic could still be caught? Yes. Is it possible that Dundee United could still be caught? Yes. Is it possible that Hearts could avoid relegation? Yes. You've got all of these factors who come in. Is it possible that, you know, if you start the season, you know, later on, that perhaps other players could be signed when, you know, a club throws money at a situation that they couldn't currently? Yes. You've got all of these sort of situations. And similarly, if you void the title, you've got a situation where the league is almost finished, and most of us are pretty certain that Celtic and Dundee United, for instance, are going to win their respective titles. It would be an incredible slap in the face and a lack of sporting integrity to these clubs and others as well, you know, in terms of finishing the season before it actually should have finished on paper and physically finished. So it's a very, very difficult situation, Eric. I mean, the key thing here is no one is going to get absolutely what they want.
A perfect solution.
I would want to see the season finished. Now, if we can find a way, and it may well be that, you know, we find a way to make sure that there's insurance cover for players and all the rest of it, that you play behind closed doors and perhaps live stream games through, you know, club television or the other main broadcasters, Sky and BBC and BT and all the rest of it. Perhaps that would be the way to do it. And I'm sure that, you know, I mean, the powers that be must be sitting scratching their heads and wondering about all these things at the moment. But in terms of sporting integrity, you would want to see all of the fixtures played to a finish.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. But at the moment, as far as the short-term picture for our clubs are concerned, surely they'll be able to tap into the government money that was made available with the Chancellor's announcement yesterday. I mean, these are businesses after all. And as well as that, you've also got clubs are starting crowdfunding appeals like Sir Raith Rovers. So yeah. I'm not quite as fearful. I mean, maybe I'm being naive here. I'm not quite as fearful of clubs going to the wall as maybe others might be. Am I being naive in that, Jim?
Well, no. I mean, I think the answer probably lies somewhere in between, Eric. I mean, one former kind of big hitter in the game that you and I both know told me immediately when the whole thing started to become apparent that he feared that 10 to 15 Scottish clubs wouldn't survive mm-hmm. this. Now, I mean, I don't think I don't mean that serious, but I don't think that it might has to be that calamitous for many reasons. One, albeit these will be loans yesterday that the Chancellor announced, the ability to tap into them may well be available since the clubs are businesses. The other thing is football fans show utterly incredible resilience when it comes to helping and mm-hmm. saving the football club. We've seen it. I mean, I think Raith were within minutes were into about a fifth of their target. I think it was Val McDermott, the author who'd said, oh, wasn't it? Val is a director at Raith as well. And, you know, very quickly they were into that. Now, it's potentially you could be looking at selling season tickets early for next season. There's a combination of things, fundraising schemes, loans from the government. I mean, you know, we saw over the piece how Hearts fans saved their club, how Motherwell fans dug deep, how, you know, here in T territory, if you want, D for life, saved, Dundee Football Club. So fans are remarkably resilient when it comes to saving the football club. And I think these are unprecedented times. And I think a huge amount of slack will be cut for businesses and football clubs are businesses in terms of ensuring that they stay afloat. They are integral parts of their community. Like Olympia, we know that, you know, I mean, they use the old Shankly line about football, not a matter of life and death, more important than this. But we know now that it's not. But they are still, and once we come through all of this, they are still hugely integral parts of their community, whether it's Dundee or United, St Johnstone, or, you know, whether it's Brechin or Arbroath or whatever. Football clubs have got this remarkable ability to fight off, very, very difficult circumstances. But that said, it may well be that some suffer and come very close to going to the wall. There's 100 yet to be kind of worked out and explained as to the potential effects on clubs.
Now, well, Jim, while I totally appreciate the sort of the short term issues that are confronting Scottish football, and we'll be confronting, let's face it, small leagues across Europe, not the big leagues necessarily, but all the small leagues. One thing that I think can't be overlooked is would be the long-term impact on the game if, and we go back to the sporting integrity thing, if you either had the null and void or in tight leagues where the title races are maybe closer than Dundee United and Celtics, you know, Raith Rovers and Falkirk, for example, if you end them with the what we have, we hold thing, either scenario, I think a lot of people will just be turned off football after that and say, well, why? How can you justify prioritising a season that hasn't started over one that has 2 months to run? Put it this way, I'm a Liverpool fan, and if at the end of all this they said, sorry, Liverpool aren't the champions, that would be me with the Premier League. I'd be opting out and say, well, why? What is the point in me watching this anymore?
I don't think you can start a new season without the current one being concluded. Yeah, like I think somehow along the line you have to conclude the current season, whenever that is. I mean, look, let's put it this way: if you're starting a new season, then you're continuing football anyway at some stage. So why not conclude that season? Or maybe a long break, and then either have a truncated season. Look, there's a possibility of doing many things here. For long and weary, you know, we can only talk about Scotland for the moment. You know, I mean, the Premiership in England is big enough and smart enough to take care of itself. But in terms of the Scottish situation, for long and weary, there has been a situation where a lot of people have been very unhappy with the current setup we've got, with the split size of the league and all the rest of it. There is now a chance to restore maybe some more community values to the game and have a bigger league, whether it's a 16 league, operate that. We've already got a pyramid structure pretty much into place. There is a real chance here to restore that. And you know what? I see, we hear all this stuff about Celtic and Rangers won't be happy and Sky won't be happy. Well, you know what? This is now about the good of the whole game. And if Celtic and Rangers are not happy, then they're going to have to suck it up and take it. And the other clubs have to reassert themselves. This is about the survival and the future of the game. We don't know here what's going on. We could go into 5 podcasts with this. For long and weary, it's been looking as though we were heading to a European breakaway.
We may well, Jim. Don't worry about that. We may well.
But I think for the moment, you've got to kind of concentrate on what is possible and what's realistic. And I think what is possible is that you simply play the season when we're ready to go again, you finish that season, and then it may well be that you truncate your next new season, but you can't start a new football season when the old one hasn't finished. It just doesn't
I've yet to hear anybody give me an argument as to why you can prioritise a season that hasn't started over one that's nearly finished. You just can't. The only argument from a Scottish point of view seems to be, we need our prize money. We need that to tide us over. That is the only thing I can see. But some people seem to be critical of UEFA. I don't. There's no way. I mean, I'd said it before the meeting. There's no way UEFA were going to decree a sort of uniform measure to stop leagues, and this is what you have to do. Are they really going to wade into help either Rangers or Celtic?
Why should they? I mean, at the end of the day, they are the overall governing body, along and FIFA, the overall governing body for world football, UEFA for European football. But at the end of the day, each national association has highly paid individuals, in this case, Ian Maxwell for the SFA, Neil Doncaster with the SPFL. I mean, these are guys who are hauling in the kind of salaries that top doctors who will be called upon to make life and death decisions could only gawp at. So, they've pretty much got away. We've been basically been bean counters so far, organising fixtures and all the rest of it. Now, for the first time, there's a serious and real test. And their job is to look at the overall good of the whole game, not just the two giants that we have. And it's a constant problem we have in Scottish football. We've got two giant clubs who, to a great extent, frankly, think that they run the game, and they have run the game for a long, long time. That said, in terms of sporting integrity, it looks to me like Celtic and Dundee United, we're talking about the top two leagues here at the moment, will win their leagues. You could not have a situation where you voided it and didn't give these teams the title. There'd be all sorts of hue and cry. The season, to me, must start again when it's safe to do so, must be concluded. Then we can think about starting a new season. But it's not for UEFA to... They can give general guidelines, but it's for the SFA in terms of national game to decide.
I don't even know if UEFA would have the powers to tell the Premier League this is how you, this is, like, say the Premier League down south or Serie A. I don't think they would actually have the authority to say this is how you have to bring it to an end.
That's right. You know, putting on my old law lecturing hat, it's a long time since I was at the law books, but I would assume it'd be ultra vires. It'd be beyond their powers. They're there to generally watch the game, not the individual aspects of how associations,
leagues are run,
or leagues are run. I'm afraid this is where, in this case in particular, this is where Neil Doncaster and the SFA through Ian Maxwell have to start earning the big bucks that they're being paid, Eric. And there will be some pretty tough choices to be made, but they've got to make them. In terms of the SPFL and SFA, they're responsible for all of the clubs, not just looking after the big ones.
What did you make? Did you find it distasteful, sort of ill-judged, the sort of the Karen Brady's, the briefing at the weekend, probably from both sides of the Old Firm, and Budge, did you find that all a wee bit hard to listen to?
Well, I mean, I think there's a real danger that at a time like this, where the most important thing of all is the preserving of life, is ensuring the health of people in the nation, particularly older folk, but preserving life and the dignity of people, there is a real danger that that we play politics with politics, and it's been unfortunate. We've seen some cheap politicking across the political spectrum, never mind football. Football certainly shouldn't be indulging in it. This is not a time for self-interest or cheap shots or whatever. It's a time for the whole game to come together and settle things in as fair a way as possible. And I have to say that I do think that people who have tried this sort of stuff to gain cheap advantage, people won't forget it. They will not forget it. So I think that, those who are trying to gain advantage, given that we don't know what lies ahead, and it may be it's somewhat exaggerated, it may be worse than we fear. We just don't know. So I think for the moment, football, not a matter of life and death. We have to come to a reasonable solution that keeps as many people happy as possible. But cheap point scoring and cheap advantage should not be sought at this situation.
Well, let's look at our local clubs, and there's a lot of them as you would expect with 2 months of the season, a lot of them have either, have things to worry about or, potentials of things going one way or t'other. Dundee United are the obvious one to start with because they're a country mile clear at the top of the division. I don't detect a panic amongst their fan base, do you?
No, don't think so. And the club have handled it well. Mal Brannigan put the statement out the other day saying that he expects that the sporting integrity should come at the fore, and he's quite right. We've talked about that. I think there are issues that will concern United, like all other clubs. Players that will be out of contract, whose immediate futures have to be decided, and all the rest of it. But I think generally speaking, I kind of sense among fans generally, we know it's quite excitable on social media, on Twitter and the likes, but I think generally people expect the right thing to be done, the sensible thing to be done. And I think if it's not done, the point you made earlier on with sporting integrity being challenged, that's a serious danger for the game. You cannot treat the fan base of any club, whether it's Celtic, Dundee United, Rangers, Dundee, Arbroath, Brechin, you can't treat them as simple commodities. These are people who pay hard to earn money. Most of them have put, or a great many of them have put their season book money up already and will be expected to do so again shortly, maybe asked to do so even earlier to help their clubs out. So you have to treat them fairly. But I know I'm not at the moment detecting any great panic. I think that, in a time when we're seeing supermarket shelves stripped bare and old folks, many old folks, very, very concerned about what's going on, I think the average football fan, understands that there are more important things to worry about than when the season restarts.
And at the other end of the spectrum in our part of the world, obviously Brechin City now, I mean, I stick with my opinion of wanting to see the season played out, and if that means that Brechin City go into the playoff, that, you know, on the football pitch they will deserve to go into, that's what has to happen, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
No, their fans shouldn't. It's not right that, you know, anybody's eyes should be lighting up at Brechin thinking, oh, this is our escape route, is it?
No, I mean, look, some supporters, in the passage of time, naturally, you know, the older you become as a journalist or a fan, you remember things that a younger generation, by the very nature of things, have little knowledge or no knowledge of. But many of us can remember situations where relegation was at Aberdeen who escaped relegation because it was at the Falkirk Stadium. Falkirk Stadium wasn't, you know, in a fit state to come up and all the rest of it. Now, a lot of people...
Motherwell have escaped relegation as well, haven't they?
Motherwell as well. You know what, now, those are for different types of reasons, but those types of things stick in the craw of I think all decent fans, or at least there's a sense of guilt among fans who believe in the idea of sporting integrity. So, you know, I mean, Brechin face a potentially perilous journey here. I mean, nobody knows at the moment. I mean, let's work on the basis that the season is going to go ahead and start again whenever it is safe to do so. Then Brechin, by the looks of it, are down and out in the league they're in, so we'll go into that playoff situation at the moment against the winners of, I think, the Lowland League and the Highland League, isn't it? So it looks like, you know, that's going to be a very, very tough occasion for them. The other thing that is unknown at the moment is there's some talk about refixing the geographical boundaries. But we have a pyramid system now. And in terms of sporting integrity, and I understand why Kenny Ferguson and all the rest of it would be hoping beyond hope that they were saved. And when, you know, when push comes to shove, I suppose people will do what it takes. But in terms of sporting integrity, it wouldn't be right.
Yeah. Well, in terms of the actual footballers, managers haven't got it easy now, have they? Because it is a bit open-ended. I don't think anybody expects us to get going again at the start of April. If you're a manager now, are you almost getting into close season mode? I mean, how long do you send your players away for?
Well, that's another thing, isn't it? I mean, at the moment, you know, if players are to self isolate, how do you train, or how do you train at the intensity you require? You know, how do you train as a team? You don't. You know, how do you work on set pieces? How do you work on the general everyday aspects that the players do? The whole bonding thing goes. You know, there's a combination of things yet to be addressed. So, what happens with contracts, you know, players out of contract in June and all the rest of it? How do you deal with these things? Where do you start thinking about new signings? I mean, all of this at the moment is absolutely up in the air. And that's why we're saying it's a fluid situation. And I do have sympathy for Ian Maxwell at the SFA and Neil Doncaster and some of the tough decisions they're going to have to make. And clubs will be trying to make decisions when they're not armed with all of the facts, and B, the facts that they are armed with may change on a daily basis, almost an hourly basis, in fact. So these are unprecedented times for football. I mean, during the war years, you know, we can recall historically that, you know, I think was it the First World War, Second World War, the season ran for a season and then stopped, you know, some teams played to get guest players and all the rest of it. I mean, these are absolutely unprecedented times, and managers, you know, will be having to adapt and make do and mend, as they used to say during the old war years about, you know, torn clothes and all the rest of it. I mean, they will be having to make do and mend in terms of what they do with squad. And of course, you know, it may well be that general guidance is issued about contract extensions and all the rest of it. But to the best of my knowledge, you can't force a player to stay at a club if his contract is up. I don't think that contract law is quite clear on that. If you sign a contract until the end of June or whatever, then club can't force you to stay. So there are all sorts of issues here that have yet to be addressed, and some of which are actually incapable of being addressed, given that we're in an absolute state of flux here.
You'd like to think with contracts and things like that, that is where FIFA and UEFA could come into their own. You know, they are the governing bodies for the for the sport, and obviously, you know, you're talking about players' unions and the like. But, you know, it shouldn't be beyond the wit of man to be able to extend contracts uniformly, you know, for for a month or 2 months, however long that takes.
I think, you know what, we often talk, Eric, about the football family. The football family has to actually show here that it is a family. And in a sense, you know, it may well be that some have got to sacrifice various ambitions for the greater good. I mean, I noticed today that I think it was Roman Abramovich, not a man who's always met with great popularity in British football, certainly English football. But I noticed that he's offered the NHS the full use of Stamford Bridge's Millennium Hotel. And he's committed to picking up all of the costs, you know, and staff from hospitals in the northwest of London are going to be able to stay there to save long commutes that they would normally have from outside London. Now, you know, that's the cynics will look and say, well, they can well afford it and all the rest of it, you know, but from my point of view, great, well done to him. Well done to him. You know, that's okay. He's a very rich man, but he's doing something. He's helping out. And I think football clubs, depending on their abilities and their needs, have got to understand they're part of the community, they're part of the football family. And to some extent, they are going to have to accept that they, you know, that there are things they will have to do that they won't want to do in normal setup, but these are not normal times. And that they will have to bite a bullet to help the greater cause of football, but the greater cause of society as well. So I think a whole lot of things are going to have to be thrashed out here, and a whole lot of things, a whole lot of people are going to have to accept things that they would otherwise not be happy to accept for the greater good.
And to finish things up, Jim, and we'll maybe touch on our own industry. I mean, obviously, it goes without saying there isn't any sport being played, certainly no football being played. There's plenty of news lines, obviously, to be keeping us occupied for the time being. But do you see this as an opportunity for the industry to kind of, you know, to make the phone calls you don't really get the chance to make, to do the features, to speak to people, give the public different types of stories? The way I see it is this is an opportunity, Jim.
Yeah, I think so, Eric. I mean, listen, I was a great believer when I was a staff reporter at BBC and now as a freelance. I think there's an almost insatiable appetite for history and nostalgia in football. And there are so many things that on a daily basis and a weekly basis we never get the chance to touch on. You know, there's a million great stories out there. You see it with things like the recent play smile on Jim McLean at the Rep. You know, I went along to the second night, which the foundation of Dundee United Supporters Club, the foundation of Dundee United Supporters organisation had organised. And at the end of it, they had Paul Hegarty and John Holt and Maurice Malpass and Archie Knox and Hamish McAlpine on the stage in a Q&A. And it was just fantastic because people want to hear all these stories about what went on in the dressing room, went on in trips, but they want to hear about the great games as well and the thoughts that these players had on, you know, what football was like then, what it's like now. And there's a million stories like that to be told. So, I mean, to some extent, I suspect that we'll all have to take a trip down the nostalgia road in time to come. Plus, of course, there'll be bigger stories to dip into as well. I mean, there will be the day-to-day coverage of where the game is going. You know, I must admit, I do have concerns for freelancers in the industry because it's
really not... Yeah. I mean,
That's a great worry. I mean, I know that, you know, that I've had a couple of gigs cancelled this week, which cost me money, but I'm fortunate in the respect. I'm at a stage in my career where I can take that hit. For younger freelancers, for young men and women working in the game as freelancers, these are really worrying times, you know. Worrying times for you, even if you're a staff reporter, because you've got pages to fill on a daily basis. And, you know, the thing with this is there will come a stage where people start to weary of even a big story like the coronavirus. They start to kind of almost go into a shell. It'll be the same with football.
They want other stuff, don't they? They want
other stuff. So, I mean, I think it's a worrying time, but on the other hand, for sports journalists, I think it's a great opportunity as well to do maybe the big sit-down interviews, the nostalgic interviews, the looking-forward interviews. You know, in the nature of the modern game, Eric, you and I both know that. I mean, not that long ago in this city and places like St John's, not in Perth, you went to pretty much every day to see the manager. You know, that's all gone. We go once a week if we're lucky enough, or twice a week occasionally. Lots of stuff is done on the phone. I think there's now a chance in a more relaxed atmosphere probably to do general thought pieces. And there's a lot of football players and people in football. I've got great fascinating tales to tell, not just about the football. Stories to tell, things that they're into, their hobbies, their likes, their dislikes in football, a million and one things. So it's also a great opportunity, I think, to to, you know, to fill the pages and to fill the airwaves and podcasts and all the rest of it with some stuff that normally we would like to do, but just as doesn't get a chance to see the light of day because, you know, copy on pages that are tight or or time is tight in broadcasting.
Mm-hmm. And to end on a positive, when all this finishes, hopefully sooner rather than later, football needs to be ready for the appetite that there'll be to see it again. Maybe, you know, maybe people will the old phrase about you don't know what you've got until it's gone type thing. Maybe we can reinvent ourselves. Maybe we can get bigger crowds through the gates. Maybe we can do things a bit differently.
I think so and I hope so. I mean, you know, you're right. You never miss the water till the well runs dry, as the old saying goes. And I think, you know, once people, I mean, by nature, we are social animals. We like to be together. We like to have the crack. We like to have a laugh. We like the banter. And that's one of the great things that football does. It allows you to do that with your mates and, you know, get things off your chest after a hard week's work. And I think that, you know, once we get it going, hopefully it'll be sooner rather than later, people will want to come back in. And I think this is a chance for clubs to start being more open and really, really becoming a bigger part of the community. There's been lots of good things going on for a long, long time at clubs. It sometimes goes unnoticed, you know, Dundee and Perth and the smaller clubs as well. I think it's a chance to build on that and really make the clubs an absolutely focal point in their communities.
Well, Jim, I think that's about time. The hamster's starting to give me a very disturbing look there. I think it must be must disagreeing with something you were saying there. I think along the line, Jim. Well, listen, thanks again. And as I said, we're going to keep trying with the podcast, and I'm sure there's going to be plenty to talk about, even until the ball comes back out again. Thanks again, Jim, and thanks for listening.
Cheers, Eric.
If you like the podcast, we'd be grateful if you tell your pals about it, or even better, leave a review or a simple rating on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. All that really helps people to find Talking Football, and that means a lot to us. Don't forget too to pick up your copy of The Courier Monday to Saturday, or go to thecourier.co.uk/subscribe to find out how to get our award-winning sport, business and local journalism across Tayside and Fife in the way that's right for you. The Courier. Local matters.